Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I guess this is our back-to-school program.
It is that time of the year.
How much did you like school, Cindy?
I loved school. School was fun.
All school?
Yeah, school was great. All of it.
Every bit of it.
Particularly culinary school. That was my favorite school.
Yeah.
I liked school until I was in probably the 10th grade.
Okay.
Then I sort of lost an interest in school. There were so many distractions.
Yeah, a lot
of it. As I got into senior high.
I guess once you go to culinary school, you have a knife in your hand, then I guess you got to pay attention.
Yeah, well, culinary school was amazing. I loved it, every moment of it.
Yeah.
How about you? Did you like school, Tony?
I loved it until I didn't. You know, it was kind of, and you have those moments. I was very teacher-oriented.
Oh, you mean if you liked your teacher,
Yeah, my orientations were lunch and teacher. I was motivated by lunch. If I knew it was an exciting lunch, I was going to have a good day.
Okay.
And I was motivated by teachers.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of.
Makes sense.
If I was inspired, if they said things that kind of stimulated my creativity, then, you know, that's. I lived a rich fantasy life as a child. Yeah, hotel school for me was.
a slight change from first grade.
From first grade, yeah. And that was the most varied cast of instructors.
Oh, yeah. Well, so
you could ever possibly have because.
Definitely.
Well, you go from accounting to finance to making beds to physical plant. You know, by the way, this is how a compressor works. To culinary instruction to, you know, like.
Sure.
Everything that runs a giant household for profit is part of that. And oh, by the way, all the students want to party. That's why they want to get into the hotel and restaurant business. Kind of an exciting situation. Well, we're not back in school.
No, we're. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, we passed the.
Well behind us. I went to school last week, actually.
Here's what I was thinking was that when you come back to school, you start talking about the first question. So, what did you do with your summer?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you have your new clothing on, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah, typically you have new clothing.
You have your new notebook and all that stuff.
And you hopefully no one makes fun of your new clothing.
Oh, gosh, I know. School is tough.
So, and. For me, it's like, did I bring lunch I like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, really smelly tuna fish sandwich that I loved every single time. So what did you do with your summer?
Well, my summer was last week, and I managed to go to France on a very quick trip, which was really kind of amazing. And
You stayed pretty much in Paris, right?
I was in Paris the whole time. I was only there for 5 days. And, you know, just if you ever think about making a quick trip, you know, or meaning you make a quick decision to make a trip. I've never done this before. I decided the day before I left that I was going. And hotels in Paris, that's not the easiest thing in the world. We've always planned our trips so far in advance. I never really even thought about it. And I've been staying at the same hotel for 23 years called Hotel Balzac, which is very close to the Champs-Élysées. It's a block off the boulevard, and it's about 2 blocks from the Arc de Triomphe, and it's a great I love the location. By the way, Tony, you're not going to believe this. Two of our guests were in the lobby. Actually, they were in the area having breakfast the morning I left. I'm like, this is amazing, and the two ladies said that they had, you know, heard us talking about it and on the radio show, actually, and so they were staying at the Balzac there, and they were going to Chez Georges for dinner, which it was exciting. Yeah, it was super fun to see them.
Chez Georges is a happy dinner.
Oh yeah, and so I just decided, and I actually I went because I had enough points to get a free ticket, and that was really the motivation for.
That's welcome to America. That
oh my
is
gosh.
The motivation for travel.
That was, I'm like, if I can do that, I'm going. And then I had called the hotel that afternoon, or actually I had emailed around 4 o'clock, which of course their time was 10 o'clock, and at the Balzac they're done taking reservations. Unlike a lot of hotels who would have 24-hour service with that, they just don't take reservations, I guess, after 9 o'clock at night or something. I don't know. I was surprised by that. But so I actually flew from Baltimore to Newark to Paris, which I've never done before. I've always either driven to Philadelphia or Dulles or whatever. And actually, those are two places. And it was really great to I actually enjoyed it. It was nicer for me, and I'm sure it's up to you how you like to travel, but I enjoyed not having to drive. And once I got into Paris, I went to the hotel, and they managed to give me the last room that they had, which was good.
I'm glad you weren't out on the street.
Me too. So, but I went right to, of course, the room wasn't ready because the flight got in at 6:45 in the morning, and by the time I got downtown, it was closer to 9, and I went over to, it's a hotel that I love, that's a beautiful hotel, and very, very expensive, so I can't stay there, but I can go over there and have breakfast. So I went over to the George Sank and had breakfast, and they have a new policy. You can't be in the main room where they have these sofas, and it's just this really cool part of the hotel, and it's fun to sit in there and watch people. Only a hotel guest can sit in there. So they walked me into the Le Cinq, which is a 3-star Michelin restaurant. I had just gotten off the airplane. I'm like, oh,
well,
God.
I'm sure that, you felt refreshed
on.
And
oh,
fabulous.
Yeah. I felt gross, and my hair looked really bad. And, you know, it's just like, no, please don't do this to me.
No taking your picture.
No, thank God. And so I'm like, well, whatever. I'm just going to go enjoy my breakfast. And had some of the best smoked salmon ever. And they served it with blinis, which I love blinis. A little bit of chopped sweet onion and
Blinis are the tiny little pancakes.
Potato pancakes, right. And super good. And a little bit of creme fraiche with whipped cream. And, oh my gosh, just this gigantic plate of gorgeous, perfect smoked salmon. Absolutely delicious. Come to find out that the chef from Le Doyen is the chef at Le Cinq, which I didn't realize he had moved there. So anyway, that was a very fun, gorgeous breakfast and a beautiful dining room. And then proceeded to that night. I had dinner at Chez George, and that was no, actually I didn't. I'm sorry. I went down to Guy Savoy's new restaurant. He has a bistro not too far from the Balzac, and I walked down there and had a quick, very quick meal because I was starting to get kind of tired. And then the that was great. That was a good start.
So what was the most exciting plate of food that you did not expect to have in Paris?
Yeah, I had
that like I said, something unexpected.
Mm-hmm. I had squab, but it was in two platings. So the first plate was the squab breast, which was much bigger than the birds that we get. And it was really, really, really good. And it was just the two breasts, and it had garnish and sauce in. But the second plate, they called a hot dog, which this is a 3-star Michelin restaurant. I was kind of surprised by that.
Pigeon hot dog, ladies and gentlemen.
And what it was incredible pastry with a forcemeat that had the liver from the squab and, you know, probably other birds. But it was so strong, and it was just so, in a good way, and it just had so much flavor from the liver, from the bird, and it was just absolutely delicious, and the pastry was impeccable.
So it was emulsified like a hot dog?
No. It was okay. Really, it was the texture of a pâté, for sure, or sausage, actually similar to a sausage, forcemeat size. And, it was just incredible. And it had a lot of spice to it. I think they had a lot of, cumin and maybe even a little bit of curry in with it, which of course the liver can hold up to, but wrapped in the pastry just held all the fat and all the juice and, all the moisture. And it was spectacular.
If I was served pigeon in a blanket, I'd be surprised too.
Yeah, I was very surprised when they called it, especially when they called it a hot dog. And then I had another course that was really, really good. I don't know if it was a surprise, but it was definitely an interesting course, which was one pasta shell, the shape of a shell, and it had three little beautiful, perfect escargot inside. And it had a coriander flower on top that was actually very, very, really very pretty. And the sauce, I've never thought of putting cilantro with or coriander with snails before. And it was a brilliant emerald green, just gorgeous, very thin, very light sauce that was spinach-based with a lot of cilantro in it. And then there were these just beautiful little white fresh beans, very similar to a cannellini bean, on the plate. And that was it. The escargot in the shell, which was just a really beautiful presentation, and this gorgeous sauce with a tone of cilantro to it and those white beans. And it was actually a gift from the chef. It was a smaller course, and it was just really brilliant and just another example of how simple something can be. But, you know, a lot of work, I'm sure, went into making that plate. But it wasn't, you know, molecularly or scientifically altered in any way. It was just really beautiful, perfect. Everything about it was perfect. Execution, the way that it looked, and the obviously the most important thing, the taste.
So where did you have the pigeon in a blanket?
It was at Le Dien, which is a 3-star right off the Champs-Élysées.
And where did you have the escargot hiding in the
Lamboisie
pasta shell?
At the Place de Vosges, which is another 3-star. And I ate at Lamboisie for lunch. I've eaten there a couple of times over the last 15, 17 years at night. I've never been there in the daytime. And I've always wanted to sit not in the front room. It is an old house. It's one of the townhouses along the Place de Vosges where the restaurant is. And it's absolutely beautiful in there. And the second room, the floor, the parquet floor, everything about it, the beautiful marble pieces along the wall that are built into the wall with the beautiful mirrors above them, everything, the fabric on the walls, the tabletop, everything about the room is just feels so good. And then, of course, it has beautiful French windows. It was a lovely room to sit in, particularly in the daylight. And the service there is incredible. And I recognize the servers. They've been there for a long time, a lot of them. There were a couple of new young men and women, but the captains are pretty established gentlemen that have worked there for years. And one of the other courses I had was sea bass. And the sea bass was not seared. It was absolutely steamed or poached. And it still had the skin on, which I thought was interesting. And it was just so moist and gorgeous and super fresh and just really pretty and sweet. And underneath was a sauce that was made with vin jaune and butter and was just filled with, the sauce was totally filled with caviar. And it was a golden caviar that was just absolutely gorgeous. And there was, because of the vin jaune, it had a almost a citrusy, would you say that's right, with vin jaune, the wine? It has almost
The vin jaune is very much like sherry, mm-hmm. So it has that character.
Mm-hmm. He might have added acid then to the sauce because it just had this beautiful level of acidity to it, and then the perfume from the wine and the caviar was incredible, and the plate up was just very pretty because of it. And then underneath the fish were these just, you know, not paper thin, but a little bit thicker than paper thin slices of fresh artichoke that were the halves of the artichoke heart, and they were just stacked in the center of the plate in circles, and the fish was on top, and everything about that, again, simplistic, but absolutely a brilliant plate up and absolutely delicious. The great joy for me was they knew I was a chef, and the sommelier came up to me at some point, pulled me away from the table and said, you know, chef is in the other room. Would you like to meet him? I'm like, yes. So it was really an honor to get to meet the chef, and he was very, very kind and gracious, and was really fantastic to get to meet him. And actually his son, who's, you know, an adult, was there as well. And I met him, and I believe he has a couple of restaurants on his own in the city, so in Paris. So that was really a great joy to get to meet them. And then I had another lunch at a 3-star, which was Guy Savoy. And Guy Savoy has moved to a new location, and he's in an old townhouse. Well, actually, I don't understand the building. It's a huge building, and part of it is a museum. And I don't know if there was just an installation there at the time or if it's a constant, you know, it's a permanent museum. But, oh, my goodness, the entrance to the restaurant was spectacular. I mean, you felt like you were, you know, going up to the royal palace or something. The steps had red carpet on, and the ceiling was just was curved and had all these beautiful plaster details. And I mean, it was just one of the most beautiful entrances. You walked off the street and walked into this part of this building. And it was, I mean, you really felt like you needed to have, you know, your absolute best clothing on and stand up straight when you were walking up those stairs. It was really gorgeous. And then the townhouse where the restaurant is really beautiful. And it has a little bit of a view of the Seine. The trees are pretty mature along there, along that side of the river, so you mostly see the trees, but you can see the water running by in between. It was kind of interesting. When I walked into the dining room where I was sat, my table was towards the French windows, And the chair was looking straight at the windows. So my back was to absolutely everyone in the dining room. And I've never seen anybody seat a single guest like that before. And I thought, oh, well, that's going to be great for me. But it just felt a little like I had my back to everybody. You know, it's felt
well,
almost.
You knew that everyone wanted to see you.
Oh, God. So anyway, and I'm just like, well, it's going to be great for me. But it felt almost rude. And but I sat down and enjoyed myself immensely. The view was really gorgeous and the day was so pretty. And it was just nice to sit in front of the window like that. And when you're by yourself, it's you know, you have to, unless you're going to pull your phone out and entertain yourself with your phone or have a book or something, between courses, you have to kind of figure out what you're going to do with yourself. So it was kind of nice to just look out the beautiful window at the beautiful view of Paris. And
you get to sit there and say, I show all of you my back.
I don't know. It's kind of weird, but that's all right.
You always take great food photographs. That's something that
I love taking photographs.
I don't know if I have the attention span for that kind of thing or what, but take great photographs.
It's also a great way to document everything.
Did you take photographs of these dishes?
I took a lot and posted a lot on Instagram. So if you would like to see what I'm talking about, it's all documented on Instagram, and I'm at Chef Wolf.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll see what my homework was this summer and get a little more from Cindy on some time in Paris. And then we'll see if she's still got it in her to take on a chef's challenge.
I look forward to it.
Against me on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine and WIPR. Welcome back to Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We're going about this in a roundabout way. We're talking. We said that back to school was the theme of the program, but you know, when you go back to school, the first thing you talk about is what you did in the summertime, right?
Right, right.
So I've been grilling Cindy, pun intended, about what went on in the summer, and she was talking about an exciting trip to Paris. But I need to ask you about the farm, because you have a lot of things going on your farm.
It's so exciting.
So how different is this year from last year?
Because so different.
Even just like the tomatoes are incredibly different from the farms that we buy tomatoes from.
And absolutely.
All that sort of business. I think people don't always realize that one year to the next is so different.
I've only lived on this is my second summer, and the tremendous amount of rainfall. I can't believe every single thing on the farm is just so much healthier. So much trees that I thought were going to die.
I was gonna say, except for tomatoes. That's the thing, is you get the big rains, everything else likes it.
Yeah.
And then tomatoes, eggplants.
My eggplants have
done.
And
some peppers really don't.
Well, that's interesting because I have done well with my eggplants.
Oh, good.
My peppers have done really well. There's something about the location of this garden. And I planted 6 strawberry plants at the beginning of the summer.
Well, you're at elevation. That helps.
I am I'm at 800 feet. Is that right? I think it's 800. Yeah. And the strawberries have taken over. They filled in half of one of my beds from 6 plants. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. I had no idea they would do that. And they're still producing strawberries. I went out and picked some for breakfast yesterday morning.
That speaks to the cool nights that you have.
Oh, my gosh. It's so incredible. Well, I'm 12 degrees cooler there than downtown. So I leave the restaurant, and I always look at the temperature because I'm pretty gleeful, especially in the summertime, about how much cooler it is out at the farm. And, yeah, it can be sometimes it's even 14 degrees cooler up by the time I get up to the top of the hill where I live. And so the strawberries are producing. I just picked a bunch of really gorgeous poblano peppers, jalapenos, serranos this morning for the restaurant. And midsummer I planted zucchini and a lot of cilantro because I want to do this dish in particular. You know, I'm super excited. I planted that cilantro with the snails. And so it's I just picked a ton of cilantro. And my tomatoes are still not the big tomatoes, not the German stripers, but the little cherries are still looking good. I mean, the plants are gigantic. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
it's
not an heirloom year.
No, it was not an heirloom year. And I put soil into these beds before each, you know, season. So the soil is, I mean, you know, Sam, came up with this mixture, and whatever it is, it's extremely fertile because everything planted in those beds has done. I mean, I don't think I've had problems with anything other than we planted fava beans this year and they were miserable. I don't know what in the world happened to those fava bean plants, but they looked like they were going to produce. And then all of a sudden they turned black and mushy and weepy. I mean, they were just awful looking.
No one wants weepy fava beans.
No. And so, but yeah, but otherwise, I mean, my lemon verbena is gigantic. My basil is gorgeous. Mint, of course, that's easy. But really everything. And the eggplants, like I said, mine look, I just picked 4 eggplants this morning and they looked really good. So
that's great.
Yeah. My apple tree is almost dead, which is a heartbreaker for me. I planted a Honeycrisp apple tree last year that was almost a 7-foot tree. And I had hoped that it would, you know, get somewhere. I mean, it looks like the saddest Charlie Brown Christmas tree you've ever seen in your life. I'm like, oh, I don't know what happened to that. But now that's also planted in the soil on the farm. So maybe I needed to bring in some soil for that when I planted it. I certainly don't know. But
well, it's one of those things you've been hearing me talk about for years and years working with different farms. Everyone doesn't do everything well.
Sure, of course.
And every year is different from the last year, and you have to taste things, and you have to check things, and you kind of have to roll with what the season's given
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do really good food, you have to be receptive to what the year is giving you and the places are giving you.
It's one of my favorite learning experiences of my life, I have to say, having this garden. It really is fascinating, and because I've kind of been thrown into it, I thought someone was going to help me, and it just didn't kind of work out, which is a shame. But, I mean, I've had to, you know, just kind of figure some stuff out. And, of course, I do have a gentleman that, you know, works on my property who's, you know, 80 years old and has been there for 40 years, which is incredible, and thank goodness for him, because I really would have struggled without him. You know, he knows every inch of the earth of the 15 acres that I own, and he is an extraordinary man. But you know, so he has helped me with some things. But the garden, you know, he has enough to do with my property, with my farm. So I take care of the garden. So it's been at least I have him as a resource. Thank goodness, and he's very accomplished. So, but yeah, it's a great experience. I mean, I walked into the kitchen this morning. I'm like, I can't. I'm just happy. It's just amazing to have. There it is. It's like a gift from God to me, quite frankly. It's extraordinary. I never thought it how joyful this would be for me.
To grow stuff.
Yeah. Truly. Truly. Amazing.
Well, if there are listeners that have photos of their gardens, stories that they want to tell about how their season went.
Yeah.
That particular things you did with things that you grew in the garden.
And how the summer weather affected you.
I'd love to hear
about it.
Bitter garden disappointments.
Or happiness.
We can probably not solve any mysteries for you.
No, definitely not.
But
we'd love to hear about it. Yeah, yeah.
So you can reach us at foremanwolf@wypr.org via email. It's probably the best vehicle for that.
Yeah, it would be fun to hear from people. Tony, what do you think, you know, now that school started and we're coming into a new season, what do you foresee in the markets coming up here?
Well, you have this wet end of the summer. You're going to have a pretty robust apple season, sort of first and foremost.
About that. That's good.
And some of the squashes started early. There, you need to make sure you're looking for squashes from drier places.
Okay.
Because if there's lots of standing water, there's going to be rot. The vines tend to rot. You know, that's...
Yeah.
So like butternut squash from very close to the bay on the western shore, not a really good idea. You know, butternut squash from maybe the drier, sandier eastern shore might work out, but they have a different flavor than the ones that come from the western shore. So it's mm-hmm. there are trade-offs in those things, but
sure.
But that's the two things. And pears, I still don't know. Pears did flower, but pear market is often tight.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that a lot of the farmers that have pear trees will make a lot more money selling them on in a regional wholesale market or a national market if it's tight in other parts of the country.
Okay.
So sounds like kind of a crazy thing, but...
I love pears. I hope we get some.
Oh, they're my favorite.
And plums. Are we past plums?
We're past plums,
darn.
Except for Italian prune plums.
Oh, I love those.
And those have been very inconsistent.
I would love to hear recipes that people have for Italian prune plums, because those are so special. That would be fun to have people write in about.
I mean, that's something that every year we preserve them at home to, you know, with spices and cognac and then use them at Christmas time with, you know, duck magre and duck breast.
That's
And literally make no sauce, just you know,
yeah,
sear those duck breasts, roast them in the oven. Yeah, and you have the little bit of jus from those plums that have reduced a lot, and yeah, they can be fantastic.
They're amazing. Yeah, I would love to have Italian prune plums. That's hard to say. And some pears together.
You could say blue plums.
That would be blue plums. That would be great. That would be so good with duck or one of the birds, squab or quail or, oh my gosh.
Well, school is a little more on my mind.
Mm-hmm. Because you have a child.
Yeah, you get to think about summer and then scooting off to Paris, which is lovely.
It is.
But yeah, that's my little one, you know, is in preschool, and you think about lunch for her. And a thing I learned from her little summer camp this summer, lunch boxes are not the same.
What do you mean?
They used to be these tin things that you carried around.
They're not like that anymore?
That had, you know, for me, it was like a Starsky and Hutch
lunchbox.
Awesome. You know?
Oh, yeah.
that kind of thing. Hey, you know.
I love that. Those were so much fun.
I could do the Starsky and Hutch hair, so why not? So instead of that, they have these things that are soft. They're not tin, so you can't whack somebody with them.
Well, that's good.
And they have a bottom compartment where you can put one of those little frozen
ice packs.
Well,
that's smart.
Which is great. Well, one, it's a lot safer for the food.
Of course.
And it means that you can put basically non-preserved food in the lunch and have it be safe and tasty.
Although that never stopped our mothers when we were kids.
Oh, no. Like I said,
there was no ice pack in mine.
I ate a lot of 85-degree tuna fish sandwiches.
and
boiled eggs and all kinds of.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah, well, I guess our stomachs could handle it.
I mean, it was me making lunch, so I just made stuff that I liked. You know,
that's right.
Could sneak in a bacon sandwich once in a while.
So, what do you suggest for some good healthy lunches this year?
The things I was packing in the summer would carry over now because my daughter comes home for lunch during preschool, but in the summer she stayed and had lunch with all the other kids. So, there's a certain amount of you don't want your child to not have a lunch that they like, you know, it's the other kids just killing their peanut butter sandwiches and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sandwiches are easy nutrition, and if a kid can handle, if they're big enough to handle it without it being a disaster.
Sure.
You know, then, because the first couple of attempts at a really little one dealing with a sandwich means you got mayonnaise everywhere and, and there's, and the ham slipped out onto the floor you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, but I like sandwiches with not just, you know, one or two things, but a little more stuff going on. Even if it's as simple as turkey and really good cheddar and little thin cucumber slices.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, flavor the mayonnaise with fresh herbs like chives or something like that.
Yeah, that's
and fun. And bread with flavor.
Okay.
The sooner your kid gets used to bread with flavor, the better their nutritional habit's going to be over time. But honestly, I wouldn't make my daughter, who's not even four, I wouldn't make her a sandwich that I wouldn't want to eat.
Right.
I don't want her to have something boring.
Right. I agree.
You know, so, yeah, the turkey and cheese and something crunchy thing is a big one.
I like the cucumber on there. That would be fun.
It's, well, when you're in a season when you can't get tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, and frankly, no one wants roasted tomatoes on their sandwich. The cucumber thing is kind of an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
A sandwich with grilled vegetables like zucchini, eggplant, peppers, that with some kind of a protein there, whether it's slices.
I mean, that's just astonishing for me to think that a kid would eat eggplant. that's awesome.
As long as it's not a super leafy green,
mm-hmm.
you know, little kids will like with spinach or something like that. Mine will. It's like it catches, I don't know, she gets freaked out with the faces that she makes and the sound effects that you get from her that are overdramatic.
So no peanut butter and jelly for your daughter?
Yes, peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, okay.
It's definitely, that was...
But it's homemade preserved jelly, and I assume you make your own peanut butter?
Do not make the peanut butter. But we do watch the sugar content on the peanut butter.
Well, there you go. That's wise.
You know, that's kind of...
All right.
Yeah, like if the bread is healthy and the peanut butter is solid, mm-hmm. and you made a good preserve, there's not too much sugar in it.
Okay,
Your kid's not going to be shot out of a cannon at 1 o'clock in the afternoon because they just had a sugar lunch.
Right. I remember the first time I had Tang in my lunchbox.
Oh.
Tang. And it was so, you know, it was all about the astronauts. Remember? I mean, so you have to incorporate some of that stuff into
Tang
the lunchbox,
awful.
Tony. Oh, yeah, it was disgusting, but it was...
I hated it with a great hate.
It was futuristic
when I was a kid.
Then.
No. I was not enthusiastic about
that. Okay, I was the one that had the wedge of iceberg lettuce in my lunchbox.
What are you supposed to do? Pick it up and stick it in your mouth?
I had the most uncoolest lunch. My mother always gave me carrots, always something healthy. My mother always had healthy. And, you know, back then, iceberg lettuce was considered to be, you know, healthy lettuce. I mean, you couldn't get a regular back then.
Yeah, Dell would only take the iceberg and throw it at somebody. that's again, leafy green, no thanks. Or no thanks, as she says. But if you give her carrots, loves it.
Yeah.
If you give her carrots and celery and hummus, loves it a lot.
Hummus is a good idea because that's protein, and you're getting, you know, you're that's good for a kid.
And it's tasty, and maybe the other kids will leave her alone. Or she has
guacamole.
That garlicky breath that you get.
Guacamole
from hummus.
Would be good in a lunchbox, or give them an avocado, I guess, sliced. Wrapped up well.
Kid's going to peel an avocado?
No, I said sliced, and I'll rub it with a little lemon juice and olive oil or corn oil and wrap it in some plastic wrap, put it in an airtight container. I'd eat that.
We do avocado.
I'd want tacos for lunch. Really good.
Well, I would like tacos for lunch, too.
I'm
starved.
Them right now. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. When we come back on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have eaten some tacos very quickly, spend a little more time on back to school. And maybe talk about one or two wines that transition the season.
Okay.
And then get into a chef's challenge that I know that Chef Sandy Wolf is totally unprepared for. All of that and more on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so let's have a fantasy moment. Our theme is back to school, and we started with fun stuff from the summertime. We've gone into school lunch and all that kind of business. And we won't talk about the monkey bars and food fights and all that sort of business. Though, man, did I love food fights when I was a kid. Really was. I had a pretty good throwing arm, so I think that's why.
Gosh. Is this at home or in school?
Oh, this is in cafeteria.
Oh, gosh.
At a boys' school.
How'd you
kidding
get away
me?
With that?
You get away with it until you don't.
Got it.
That's the way those things go. But if you were to go back to school, what would you want for lunch? What would your portable lunch be right now?
Oh, easy. Saffron basmati rice. With
cold?
Yeah. I love cold rice.
Okay.
So a green salad. Dressing, really good dressing. So good olive oil, maybe a little bit of lemon and saffron.
I'm just trying to think of the practicalities of packing this.
Yeah. And then I love lettuce and rice together. So just make it possible for me to mix, you know, if I was a child, make it possible for me to mix everything together in a bowl. So have it all in a bowl.
You have moments of eating like a child, so.
And, well, you have moments of acting like one, so there. Okay. So,
you got to be good at something.
So you've got lettuce, rice, and dressing, and a little bit of cold chicken. I don't mind. That'd be good, as long as chicken's tender when it's cold. So it's best if it's, you know, braised so it's tender.
So the chicken's uptight.
Yeah, or...
And cold, you don't want it.
No uptight chicken. Or there's, I forget the brand, but Persian people love tuna and rice. And I have to say, I would also eat that. So either chicken or the really good canned tuna. Yeah, that'd be easy. How about you, Tony? What's your dream lunch? Or what's your lunch?
My dream lunch is always the same. One, you know I'm a sandwich person. I really like sandwiches.
You notice
I
didn't come up with a sandwich.
No, and I like interesting sandwiches.
Yes, you do. Uh-huh.
It's always a lamb sandwich. It's always cold lamb leg.
Oh, yeah. That is good.
It's always aioli. It's always some kind of rustic bread.
Mm-hmm.
Green olives on there. Red onions on there.
Raw?
Yeah.
Of course. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not scared of bad breath.
Well, I just don't like raw onions. I hate raw onions.
Don't say hate.
I don't like them.
It's a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So, but it's the olive, onion, lamb, aioli.
Good bread.
It's just amazing.
That sounds good. I could do that
just
too.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. You can open face.
Thinly sliced.
You can make it nice and thick and you can cover it up, but...
I've told you about the pomegranate mayonnaise I make for the turkey at my family's house after Thanksgiving when I get to go there. For the leftovers?
Yeah.
That would be good. That would be good with your lamb sandwich, pomegranate mayonnaise made with pomegranate vinegar.
Don't mess with my lamb sandwich.
Yeah, or you could add some pomegranates because that would be good for you.
I'll eat pomegranates, but don't monkey with my lamb sandwich. It's not cool.
So, all right, let's talk about wine. As
I'm ready for a glass of wine after all
that. Yeah, I know you are.
That sandwich is sacred to me. Don't monkey with my sandwich.
As we're transitioning into a new time, I saw leaves dropping today. I'm just, it's so great. And my dogwoods are turning red.
It's because you live in the Great White North.
30 minutes north, it's amazing what you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you thinking about, you know, wine-wise now that the weather's changing? What are you excited about?
You do. I mean, I always feel the seasonal change. And it's funny that we talked about a few episodes ago about rosés and how that's just a giant thing.
Yeah.
And I've got to think, I mean, at least for me, the weather starts to change. Like if I put a sweater on, I'm done with the rosé.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of...
Me too.
It loses its... You don't like rosé. It's just
no stinking rosé.
You've been outed. No, but I mean, it's just you want something it's not the refreshing. It's the warming. It's the
you know me so well.
You know, robust. It's just a more robust personality than that, and it's
sure
whether that's white or red.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, I mean, autumn comes. It really kind of leans me towards red very heavily. You know, spring comes, I start to lean more rich, you know, rich white, and then as it warms up, bright white. But
And then Viognier.
Sometimes.
Yeah. But, so what reds?
Oh, a couple of geeky things that can be really good as you go. Reds that are not too dense, not too thick, that want salty food, snacks, easy things. Nothing heavy because they're not really in that season yet, but reds that have a little snap and really good fruit and interesting aromatics. There's an Austrian grape called Blaufränkisch. That there's better and better quality with all the time. That can be lovely. That's a light to medium bodied red. There's excellent Barbera available from Piemonte in Italy, and Barbera the vintages that's available, especially 13. Are very strong right now.
Good.
That are in the pipeline. And there are a lot of price points for Barbera, but mostly relatively modest.
Okay.
And, but yeah, especially if you want salty things, if you're going to have red wine with pizza, honestly,
mm-hmm.
it's one of the very best ways to go. Or if you want a glass of red wine, you just want to sit and eat peanuts.
Right.
Which I will admit to doing sometimes.
Sure.
But those are two things that come to mind. Richer than that, it's funny, I go from wanting wines from warmer places like Châteauneuf-du-Pape or from Argentina or from Sicily in the summer, if when I want reds, to wines from cooler places. So it's a big Barolo Barbaresco time for me right now. It's definitely Bordeaux is on the brain right now. You don't think about it because Bordeaux seems like it's south in France. But it's so much moderated by the Atlantic that it's honestly kind of a cool place to grow Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot and all of their friends. So those wines that have a little more freshness, I guess. It's funny. I want that acid. I want that firmness to be there. And the food that you want as the season changes wants that as well.
Hmm.
So, but that's kind of what's on my brain.
What goes with pumpkin? I know it's a little far out, but I'm just thinking, what wine?
Well,
I made a pumpkin risotto, what would you want to drink?
Pumpkin risotto,
spicy.
But with what? With pancetta?
Yeah.
Pumpkin risotto.
Well, I usually do put bacon
with white beans.
Some good earthy spices. And
pumpkin risotto with crispy chicken livers.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkin risotto with sage and dried chilies. I mean... The pumpkin and the rice both want something that's going to be, has an edge to the flavor, just like all the stuff we talked about.
Okay.
The Barbera that I was talking about could do it. I think you want something a little softer than that, though. Maybe a wine from Valpolicella, not Amarone necessarily, but Valpolicella in the Veneto in northeast Italy. That might do very well.
And what about, you know, as we're coming in, you say we're going to get, apples. If we were doing, say, a bird dish with apples, you would do a white? Maybe like chicken, just something simple, chicken and apples, cream sauce, little calvados, little shallots in the sauce.
Something simple.
Yeah, a little bit of braised apple in the dish.
Wine from Alsace is the first thing that comes to mind.
Sure.
Pinot Gris, if you want something sweeter. Riesling, if you want it to be drier. Pinot Blanc, if you want it to be modestly priced.
Okay.
You could also, if you did bigger, richer Riesling from, if you wanted bone dry from Austria, from the Wachau, Wachau is that region with the top Rieslings and Grunewaldliners in Austria. But that's the first stuff that comes to mind.
Yeah, Riesling kind of seems like this time of the year.
And also, yeah. So, and also, to some extent, Beaujolais. 2015 Beaujolais is fantastic. People need to go and give it a shot.
Great, good.
It's probably the best vintage since 1976.
Oh, my gosh.
For Beaujolais. So,
okay.
Well, we're there. You can't avoid it any longer. Time for Chef's Challenge.
Chef's Challenge. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Green apples, rockfish, raw oysters, farro, chicken livers, cranberry beans, sage, cumin, garlic, yellow onion, dairy.
That's whatever dairy you need.
Cauliflower, walnuts.
It's white and kind of like.
Last tomatoes. I just can't read your writing. Neck, plum, something.
Neck pumpkins.
Neck pumpkins.
Those are the sweet little
pantry
like sugar
garden.
Pumpkins you get knocked
Neck
over.
Pumpkins. So raw oysters with a julienne of Granny Smith apples and just a little bit of apple vinegar. And so that's, you know, hors d'oeuvre time. And the rockfish, chicken livers, huh? Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the cauliflower.
I love chicken livers.
I do too. So actually, the chicken livers are going to be the first course, and I'm going to fry them as I do. So
I'm shocked.
I marinate them in buttermilk, which helps to. I wash them really well. I clean them very well. I take all the green parts off, any fat that's hanging off, and then they're marinated in buttermilk until I'm ready to serve them. No more than 2 hours in buttermilk. And then a cornmeal breading procedure, which is about 50% cornmeal, 50% all-purpose flour, a tiny bit of cayenne pepper and salt, and I'm going to fry them in peanut oil. And so once I'm ready to fry them, they only take about a minute and a half to 2 minutes at 350 degrees in the fat. So once I'm ready to do that, I need a garnish for this dish. So what I'll do is I'll cook the cranberry beans with a little bit of cumin. You've given me cumin and sage. So I'm going to cook them in water with salt and cumin. And once the cranberry beans, they're fresh beans, they don't take very long to cook. I'll saute a little bit of garlic and onion that you've given me and add those to the beans once they're done. And that's going to be the garnish for the chicken livers. And that little bit of sage, I'm going to fry those in the peanut oil as well and have these beautiful fried sage leaves with the chicken livers and the cranberry beans on the plate. That'll be first course. And actually, a little bit of the last tomatoes I'll make a quick relish with as well. So a little bit of tomato.
Yeah, I think it's nice to add that acid.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
So a little tomato relish. And then the rockfish will be with the farro, which will be slow cooked, which I will also add a garnish of ground walnuts to it at the end. So slow cook the farro, have that ready to go, and just glaze the bottom, basically. Well, I don't know if glaze is the right word, but put it on the bottom of the plate, grill the rockfish, lay that on top, and then garnish that with cauliflower that's been blanched off in heavily salted water and is then sauteed with some of the neck pumpkin. So a small dice of the pumpkin, slices of the cauliflower. Actually, I'm going to keep a little bit of the walnuts for that as well. Add the walnuts at the end and then just a little bit of butter. Yeah, that would be good. And serve that with the rockfish.
Sounds good. I thought I was going to get some pumpkin pie out of this.
No, not from me. Maybe from my pastry chef, but not for me. There you go, Tony.
All right. Your turn.
Have some fun.
Does that mean it's September? It's time to start thinking about pumpkin pie, right?
Yeah, sounds good. I like to think about that pretty seriously.
Mm-hmm. All right. Zucchini, Niçoise olives, rosemary, extra virgin olive oil, butter, and cream, blue potato, some of the little blue fingerlings,
mm-hmm.
Green tomato.
We're getting all of this locally.
Shallots, garlic, onion, cannellini beans.
Locally fresh.
Mustard greens, veal stock, bacon, New York strip. That's nice. Is it a whole piece?
Mm-hmm. A whole New York strip.
Scallops. Oh, you gave me fancy stuff to work with. Can't believe it. Well, the scallops, I mean, you have a pretty natural first course with the scallops. I would grill those green tomatoes and make a little puree. Is there any garlic hiding in here? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little bit of sweated garlic and onion with the green tomatoes to make that puree. That goes down on a plate. Sear the scallops in the pan and crisp up the bacon and give yourself little rounds of bacon to mm-hmm. top each of the very simple first course. Really, should be really nice.
Okay.
You could also put a little bit of blue potato puree on that plate. That'd be pretty easy and attractive with that, especially with the green.
Yeah,
surprisingly good with the green tomato.
Mm-hmm.
The particular acidity of that.
I did a veal dish recently with blue potato and cucumber salad on top. Oh my gosh, I love that. Go ahead.
All right. but more about me. So.
But back to Tony.
Yeah. The mustard greens, you want to use some more of the bacon and a little bit of the veal stock to cook it, but not but so much. These are mature. These are babies.
What are we talking about?
The mustard greens.
Oh, they're babies.
Oh, they're babies then.
Tender.
No.
Nice, tender little ones.
Yeah. I would maybe render a little bit of the bacon fat and make something of a, while that's still warm with a little bit of the bacon, it's also as mustard green, so you have a garnish with that strip. The question is, what sort of cooking apparatus? You need to cut the strip into steaks. You roast the whole piece. I do not have, in a perfect world, you have a rotisserie where you can, you know, you can make a, whether it's an olive paste from the Niçoise olives that you have or some kind of relish with the shallots, but you can slowly put in a rotisserie that whole piece of strip and roast that slowly and slice that nicely. But yeah, it's funny. I really want the mustard greens and the cannellini beans with that mm-hmm. with that beef. So I want to roast it more than I want to grill it, just for the texture.
Right.
I don't want it to tighten up the same way.
It's just nice when you can roast the whole New York strip. It comes out so nicely.
You can take that stock down a little bit and make a bit of a reduction out of it with some of the shallots. Not too tight, though, because I've sort of landed on a Tuscan beef dish with mm-hmm. slow-roasted...
That's funny.
Slow-roasted right. strip with the cannellinis and the mustard greens wilted in the bacon.
Okay.
And managed to avoid the butter and the cream. Yeah, I do what I do and you do what you do. That's kind of funny. All I need now is a bottle of Brunello for that meal. So, well, I think that's all we have time for on the Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. You can download this or any other one of our episodes from the podcast available on the WYPR website. Just go to the Foreman & Wolf page. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on Instagram.
On Instagram as Chef Wolf and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you want to email the program, if you have questions, items for us, those garden photos or garden stories from this past summer, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. And if you want to follow my Instagram, it's the real Tony Foreman, as opposed to all the others. And thanks for listening.
And happy Sunday.